Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 80. I'm Jim Cornell and this is the weekly podcast from LaBiotech. And this week we have a great conversation on a very interesting subject, and that is treating infertility through changing the vaginal microbiome. It's an exciting new avenue of treatment, and the company doing this is called Freya Biosciences, and it has facilities in Denmark and the US in Massachusetts. To tell us about the vaginal microbiome, why it's important in investigating fertility issues, and about Freya Biosciences is the company's co-founder and chief science officer, Johan von Hulkema Fleek.
So I guess the obvious and easy question is if you could tell me about the company.
Yeah, of course, Jim. So Freya Biosciences is a clinical stage women's health company. And we are currently mostly focusing on improving reproductive health outcomes for women. So, you know, helping them realize their hopes and dreams for building a family. And the product modality that we are working on, and I will tell more about that, or we can talk more about that later on, is we're actually developing microbial immunotherapy. So microbes targeting the vaginal microbiome and through that change the immune system to improve reproductive health outcomes. We're truly a transatlantic company. We're tapping into the vast knowledge in the area on both sides of the Atlantic. Part of the team is in Copenhagen, and the rest of the team is in the Boston area. And we were founded based on science, technology, and clinical expertise in the Copenhagen area, but also with help of work that was previously done at Johns Hopkins. And that's all combined into the company.
You mentioned the primary focus is the vaginal microbiome. Could you tell me a little bit more about how that kind of developed and what that is?
At the origination of the company, there were sort of three areas that come together and make it like a perfect storm to create a company like Freya Biosciences. And I think the first thing that is now getting more and more attention, actually, is that women's health in general is largely understudied, underfunded, and also drug development in the women's health area is just not at the size, the breadth, and the depth as it should be. And interestingly, there's a lot of acknowledgement for that today, and we can see, especially in the last 5 years, there's a whole ecosystem emerging, right, to facilitate this. There's more attention for it. Big pharma companies start to pay more attention to it. We see a special venture capital community that really wants to fund this. We actually see also a lot of companies and new initiatives emerging, and some of them very successful. But what always struck us is that a lot of these new companies, they focus very much on lifestyle adaptations, a lot with apps, direct communication of a woman with her medical advisors. There's actually much less real classical drug development, really developing new solutions to help women manage their health issues. So that's the first area. Then the second area, which is very much where I also come from, I am a microbiologist by training. And over the last two decades, we have seen this whole area of the microbiome, which I think many people in your audience will be familiar with. So we've seen it grow and gaining massive attention. And it's now recognized as a major player in health and disease. And a lot of attention has been focused on the gut microbiome. We've even seen drugs now to treat infectious disease that are on the market to treat recurrent refractive C. diff infections. But I think what the science has especially told us over the last decade or so is that the microbiome has huge importance in driving our immune tone, right? The way that our immune system functions. Because, of course, the immune system has two major roles. One is keeping bad guys out, especially microbes, but at the same time also tolerating our own body, right? So that you don't, that your immune system doesn't attack your own, does harm to your own body. And that notion of the immune system being so much driven by the microbiome actually is my personal conviction makes that almost any drug development area that focuses on the immune system, whether it's decreasing inflammation or maybe improving immunotherapies in the cancer area, always has to consider the microbiome. And in the gut microbiome, we see a lot of innovations in that area. Then let's go to the vaginal microbiome. I think the vaginal microbiome is unique in the sense that it's actually way less complex than the gut microbiome. In the gut microbiome space, after two decades of research, we are still arguing what the exact dysbiotic, the adverse state is in ulcerative colitis, for instance. There's a lot of progress made, but there's still no consensus. The vaginal microbiome is way less complex. At the highest level, it exists in two states. A woman is either dominated by vaginal lactobacilli, which produce lactic acid and has a low pH, and it's generally associated with improved outcomes, right? less risk for infectious disease, and better reproductive health outcomes. Or it's in a dysbiotic state, which is characterized by highly complex communities, often strict anaerobes, and also many of these bacteria are described to drive inflammation. So from a drug development point of view, that is really attractive because tissue can actually, you have a very clear therapeutic target if you want. And that dysbiotic state is increasingly associated with worse outcomes clinically, right? Preterm birth, lower pregnancy success rates, recurrent pregnancy loss, all of those areas, more and more evidence that dysbiosis is associated and potentially driving it. And then the third thing, which brings these two areas together, right? So that is really the fact that while a lot of drug development in reproductive health has focused on, let's say, targeting hormonal dysfunction. And more recently, the area of reproductive immunology has gained a lot of attention. So here we bring microbes, immune system, inflammation, and reproductive health together. And that's where we really want to focus on. And without going in too much detail, maybe it's interesting to say a few words about this. Think about the pregnancy process, which is a very unique physiological process, right? There is an embryo, which has genetic material of both the father and the mother, that has to implement in the endometrium. And that means that actually the woman's immune system has to tolerate a non-self entity. And this process is better and better studied. And it sort of is comprised of different stages. There's a very short, like pro-inflammatory stage where you get opening of the epithelium and you get vascularization. And then there's massive tolerance induction because you don't want to reject it. And that process, when it's not highly synchronized, actually can lead to lower pregnancy rates or early rejection of the embryo. And that's specifically what we want to target. We want to take away that inflammatory signal so that the natural process can go its way and you facilitate a pregnancy. That's one of our key therapeutic areas.
You mentioned the gut microbiome, which is well studied, but also incredibly diverse. And you mentioned that the vaginal microbiome isn't quite as diverse, but are there still big variations between individuals?
Yes, there are definitely considerable variations between individuals. Even in that pre-birth, the lactobacillus dominant state, you have several species. And within those species, I think this is a very important thing to always keep in mind. Even if, let's say, a woman is dominated by Lactobacillus crispatus and Lactobacillus jansenii, there at the strain level, there is considerable diversity, right? Each strains have a large difference in genetic makeup, and that actually translates to different functional properties. And we believe, and we've seen that also, that there's real valuable biological activity that is specific to certain strains. And we can come back to that later when we talk about both our discovery platform and also our drug modalities.
Does that diversity make it more challenging to treat?
Well, I think, yes, of course, that brings some scientific challenge. But the interesting thing is that with the toolbox that we have available now, that science has delivered to us over the past decades, it's actually at a scale that I think it can really be properly untangled. And we can truly understand and elucidate in a very data-driven way the associations between specific microbes and the immune system, and then translate that to therapeutic modalities. And to make you then a little bit less abstract, so one of the things that we decided very early on at Freya Biosciences, we were not going to be another microbiome company only, right? In the end, we're not about treating dysbiotic microbiomes. We're about treating women and helping them get into the right physiological state, in the right immunological state, to bring that therapeutic benefit in reproductive health. And that also meant that early on, we invested a lot in setting up a technology platform that allowed us to actually simultaneously interrogate the microbiome composition and also the immune tone. So we've now sampled hundreds and hundreds of women where we measured in their cervical vaginal secretion, so in the vagina, the microbiome composition. And at the same time, we did a vast profiling of many immune markers related to inflammation. So that means that for each of these women, we have a microbiome composition and an immune marker profile. And then you can look for associations. And the beauty is that we actually found very robust associations between specific microbiomes, lactobacillus dominance, specific lactobacillus dominance, and a lower inflammatory tone, while this dysbiotic microbiome, dominated by pro-inflammatory bacteria, indeed in the vagina, leads to a higher immune tone and specifically the higher expression of inflammatory markers. So that's been really a treasure trove for us to then build our therapeutic platform.
Speaking of your platform, could you tell me a little bit more about that and how you are using immunotherapy to target the microbiome and what you're actually changing in order to improve fertility?
I think maybe it's good to put a few words on how we addressed it indeed. So we started with these, what I would call prospective cohorts. So really screening lots of women, healthy women, that either are in a status of lactobacillus dominance or have this dysbiotic microbiome. And dysbiotic microbiome does not mean that they have bacterial vaginosis, right? Microbiologically, it looks very much like bacterial vaginosis, but they actually are not symptomatic. And we screened the associations between microbiome composition and immune markers. We did that in healthy women. We also did it in a population that actually was going to undergo in vitro fertilization. So we also know the correlation between microbiome, immune tone, and ultimately pregnancy success in an in vitro fertilization clinic. So with that knowledge, we thought, well, what is the best way to now identify a microbiome therapeutic to actually reverse dysbiosis and bring it to lactobacillus dominance that then gives this desired immune tone and desired pregnancy success rates? And we decided to sort of turn the classical drug development funnel upside down. In a classic drug development paradigm, you would start with looking at these associations, isolating bacteria, maybe putting them in an in vitro model, maybe even in a mouse model, and only then going to human, right? And we decided not to do this because I think over the years, the track record of this approach in the microbiome field has not been too impressive. And that is because the translational value of this in vitro and animal studies is actually not very high in many cases. And that's even more challenging in the vaginal microbiome field because there's not even good animal models for the vaginal microbiome. Right? Humans are the only mammals that are truly dominated by lactobacilli. So we decided to go the other way. We use a inhuman discovery platform. And that's very much inspired by the work that's been done on fecal microbial transplants in the gut microbiome field. Essentially, you identify donors with a microbiome composition that you think is desired. In our case, a specific lactobacillus dominant microbiome, and then another, a whole series of other health-related characteristics. You harvest this, and then you screen women that have a dysbiotic microbiome, the adverse situation with this higher inflammation tone. And you dose those women with this dysbiotic women with material from the healthy donors. And we then followed what happened with the microbiome and also what happened with the immune parameters. And astonishingly, and we did this without an antibiotic pretreatment, right? In the gut microbiome and FMT space, people often first use antibiotics in order to clean away the bad bacteria before they bring in the good. We didn't do this. We didn't use antibiotics. We just dosed. And to our surprise, in our 34-patient study that we carried out in Ireland, where we just reported also the top-line results, and we'll come with more details over the coming year, we actually saw a 50% response rate. Right? So in 50% of the cases, you saw bacteria from the donor and grafting in that recipient. And in many cases, they actually become dominant. They wipe away the dysbiotic microbiome. And that also is then translated to a change in the immune profile. So changing to lactobacillus dominance actually decreases inflammation. I think this is a very, very important proof of concept of the ability to change the microbiome, having the ability to change the microbiome and also affecting the immune profile later on. So this vaginal microbiome transplant technology is actually one of the products in our portfolio. We call it FB101. But we also use this, I previously referred to this as a discovery platform as well. And so by doing deep analysis of the microbiome of the donors and the recipients, and also then using metagenomic sequencing as a tool to trace which of the strains in the donor material were actually colonizing in the recipient, this allowed us to identify strains and genomic signatures of strains that really drive colonization. And then we went back to those donors and we actually isolated physically in the lab, right, on plates. We isolated these strains and we built a library of strains with proven ability to colonize in dysbiotic recipients. with a whole set of additional screenings and characterization tests, we actually identified a small consortium of strains that we have now under production at a manufacturer, and that will go into a phase one trial also still this year as a second type of product. This is what we call FB301, which is a defined strain product that captures many of the clinical proven benefits that we learned in our vaginal microbiome transplant studies discovery platform.
How does the microbiome change when you add different species and strains?
Yeah, so as a microbiologist with a specific interest in microbial ecology, one of the things that really astonished me is if you do a transplant study, a vaginal microbiome transplant study, and it is successful, you actually see within 24 hours that the lactobacilli from the donor are colonizing the recipient and are starting to push out the bad bacteria. And typically within a few days, they take over. And if they take over, in most cases, it's like 95% or more. They really become dominant. It's a complete switch of the ecosystem. You're either in one state, lactobacillus dominance, or in dysbiosis. And here you switch from dysbiosis to lactobacillus dominance. So the dynamics of this are very fast. And in many cases, we actually see that it's durable, right? So even through menstrual cycles, and menstrual, menses is described to be one of the factors that can actually cause dysbiosis and drive the system to switch back to the bad condition. In most cases, or in many cases, we saw that through several cycles of menses, we retained dominance of lactobacilli, which adds to the power of the technology.
And you mentioned earlier that you saw a good response rate in the studies that you've already done. What's happening in the people that it's not working for?
That is, I think, an excellent question. And of course, one that we are very interested in. And I think the honest answer is that we still don't fully understand that. But as we scale the number of studies that we're doing in our discovery platform, these transplant studies, we get more and more insight in combinations of donor material and recipients that work or do not work. And every time we do this deep microbiome analysis and this deep immune profiling, and I think it's fair to say that we start to see the first sort of associations and the predictors of activity, and we want to scale that and get deeper and deeper understanding so that we can actually address more and more of the women that otherwise would be refractive to the intervention. On top of that, and without going into details, we also learn more and more about the process of administrating, timing, those kind of things. Yeah, what are, from a very down-to-earth clinical perspective, the best practices of driving to success? And again, it's all very data-driven. Data are really based in clinical interventions, which I think is the most powerful way to actually make rapid progress.
What are you measuring as success, getting the microbiome into the state that you want it to, or ultimately the ability to get pregnant, I guess?
That is also an excellent question. So first of all, I didn't say that in the introduction, but we are still a very young company, right? We don't even exist 4 years. So, and in the meantime, we've developed two products and we've generated clinical data of over 100 interventions. So on the one hand, we're very far, but it also means we're still not in our actual patient population, with one exception. I will talk about that later. So today we've done phase one study, we've done dose finding, protocol optimization. That's the type of data we have in healthy volunteers. And the endpoints are really safety, and the product is very safe. I had not talked about this, but of course, that's a very important thing to mention early on. And we've seen this impact on the immune system. Now, the next stage, of course, is to go to a what is called a phase two trial in drug development and really go into your patient population. And we recently, just 6 weeks ago, I think, announced the completion of our Series A funding. We raised another $38 million USD. And that money actually will allow us to complete a phase two trial. And we will most likely do that in a population undergoing IVF. And there we should be able to correlate the change of the microbiome to the change in the immune system to ultimately an effect on pregnancy. That's what we really want to achieve. And in parallel, I should also say that's our lead indication, but we continue to do additional discovery work in prospective cohorts, and we continue to think about extensions of our pipeline mainly in other areas of inflammatory immune-driven disease of the female reproductive tract.
Right. I was going to ask if the work that you're doing could lead to other conditions becoming treatable.
Yeah, so I think maybe we should just reinforce the fact that unlike the gut microbiome, this vaginal microbiome space, yes, it's accelerating rapidly, but the amount of data are still only a fraction of what we know for the gut microbiome. So it is our strong conviction, also based on the data that we actually gathered on the association of the vaginal microbiome with immune status, that the vaginal microbiome and microbial immunotherapies are really a very promising modality across a whole range of diseases of the female reproductive tract. And you know, we see the first pieces of literature data also, I think, pointing at this. So we think that we're only starting to uncover the potential. And strategically for us as a company, it's really important to also focus on a indication where we can actually deliver within the time frame and the sort of resources and the promises that we made to our investors. But this is by no means the end of the story. We think there's a much larger potential behind this, you know, both for microbial immunotherapies as drugs, but maybe also, and we have high hopes for this actually, that our discovery platform of these interventions, looking at the immune system and then looking at the clinical outcomes, will actually lead us to potentially to new immune targets that can also be addressed with other modalities, classic biologics or maybe small molecule drugs or what have you, right? So this discovery element of the platform, I think, remains very, very interesting and valuable, and we'll try to maximize the learnings from it.
And I know it's not exactly a disease and it's maybe a bit tangential in terms of a question, but does the vaginal microbiome change during menopause?
Yes, there are a number of hormonal changes that also indirectly drive changes of the microbiome, the vaginal microbiome. Surprisingly, the amount of high-quality data in this area is still not very large. There are many smaller studies. But it definitely is unfavorable for a lactobacillus dominant community. And one of the main mechanisms behind this, as is postulated, is that actually menopause leads to less production of glycogen, which is the one of the main food sources for the lactobacilli in the vagina. And that could be one of the factors that's involved. But again, it's a potentially a very interesting area and a clear unmet medical need that can and should be addressed.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the platform and the trials that you're working on?
Yes, absolutely. So today we have completed some of the phase one trial that I just alluded to in healthy volunteers with the transplant product, our FB101 product. We are currently far advanced with a dose finding trial for this product as well, which is, I think, supporting the transplant product, but also giving us many other learnings on how to best target the vaginal microbiome, also with a defined strain product. Then there's one small proof of concept trial that I have not spoken about yet that is actually published about half a year ago and drew quite some attention. And that's actually the only time that we went into a patient so far. With help of Henriette Swara-Nielsen and Tina Rundling and their teams at a hospital in Copenhagen, under their guidance, supervision, and they really performed this work, we actually dosed with a vaginal microbiome transplant a woman with a history of failed pregnancies and stillbirth, at three consecutive ones. And she was also diagnosed with bacterial vaginosis and really untreatable or hard to treat. And so we decided to use a vaginal microbiome transplant, and we actually reversed dysbiosis to lactobacillus dominance. She got spontaneously pregnant, and actually she delivered a term baby. Now, this is NS1, so I always want to be very careful, but I think this is the first piece of evidence that we also have at hand, you know, that a change of the microbiome, at least in this case, was associated with a favorable pregnancy outcome in a woman with a terrible history of failed pregnancies. So those are the data we have today. Then for our strain-based program, we're also this year going to do a phase one trial. And then, as I said, we are funded to do a phase two trial as well in an IVF population. And we think that by the end of our financing period, that will be a major value inflection point. next to all the activities that we're doing to expand our pipeline.
You mentioned the trials with IVF. Is your treatment something that works best with other treatments, or do you see that it has the potential to be a standalone treatment?
So I think this is a wonderful question, and one that we actually have spent a lot of time on thinking, and sort of both from a scientific and clinical perspective, as well as from a, let's say, company development perspective. And it's our conviction, also with help of our very strong scientific advisory board, that actually the mechanism of action is translatable also outside of an IVF clinic. This should also help couples to get pregnant that have a history of unexplained infertility to some extent, where the microbiome is a driver. And treating dysbiosis in these women should also lead to higher pregnancy success rates. However, we've really chosen to initially focus on IVF, and there's a number of reasons for that. And one of the main reasons actually is that this is a highly controlled environment, right, where everything is optimized. So from a clinical development perspective, it's actually less complicated to do a trial there. And, you know, there's a real unmet need and a real product opportunity here as well. So that's why company-wise, we chose to focus on this for now.
And because of that unmet need, is it easier to find trial patients?
Yes, we have spoken a lot with IVF clinics, treating doctors. And I will say there is a large awareness, sometimes deep scientific understanding, sometimes indeed awareness, that the vaginal microbiome and vaginal dysbiosis is associated with adverse pregnancy outcomes. And there are even some diagnostics on the market that try to target this. So many clinicians are aware. And I think many patients, to some extent, are also aware. Because if a woman gets to the stage of undergoing IVF, she typically has a history of trying to get pregnant. And because of the limited time available, women are very, very motivated to do everything possible to increase their chances. And that means that we believe that if we show convincing data that we actually help, there should be a large uptake and desire to use these products in clinical treatment, both for the IVF clinics as well as for the women actually undergoing the treatment, right? Everybody benefits here.
The actual process of obtaining the product, I know that you're growing these bacterial strains, is that easy and expensive, or is it a long process? Could you tell me a bit more about the actual process?
Yeah, especially for defined strain consortia, where you combine a limited number of bacteria into one product. You know, the manufacturing of these is, I would say, scientifically, industrially, it's not a very cutting edge process. There are actually specialized companies that are only doing this type of work. And, you know, in a previous life, I even worked for one of these companies, so, and co-created one of them. So essentially, that part, I would say, is largely de-risked. It doesn't mean that it's super fast and super simple, and, you know, it still requires some investment. But from a risk profile perspective, I think that is very low. And on top of that, the type of bacteria that we are working with are way easier to cultivate, to harvest, and to stabilize than many of the bacteria that are found in the gut. And as a sort of illustration of this, many gut bacteria are extremely sensitive to oxygen, right? And when I did my PhD, which is quite a while ago, many of them were actually described as uncultivatable. Of course, that is, you know, if they can grow in your tummy, they can grow somewhere else. But the point that these are difficult bacteria to work with is still true. And even that's been solved already, right? So for vaginal lactobacilli, that is just, everything is easier and cheaper. So this is not a high element of risk in our portfolio.
All right. And what about storage and transportation? Is it something that you could create them all in one place and ship them all over the world? Or would you prefer to have different production sites closer to the clinics?
What strategically the best solution is, that depends on where we are as a company at that stage. I think both could work. And again, I'm going to focus on the defined strain product right now. That manufacturing-wise, at one site, you can manufacture material for tens of thousands of doses in a relatively limited period of time. So such products are highly scalable. And if one does the proper work on making the product that is also ensures proper stability, you can actually ship it around the world and get it to the ultimate end user or patient in a fairly easy way. There's still work that needs to be done to do that correctly and well, but there are no intrinsic hurdles that would prevent this.
You mentioned the funding that you received. Where does that position you?
Probably many of your listeners will also realize that the biotech market, the VC market, and for startups acquiring funding has been absolutely brutal the last 2 years. And it means that funding has gone down significantly. And actually, many companies that initially receive funding and are going for a next round have had difficulties. And we've seen really many companies having to slim down or even fail because of this. So in that context, I think our Series A raise after our seed in 2020, our Series A end of last year, we're in a very fortunate position to have received this funding and this confidence from our investors. We are financed to get to a next major inflection point, like a phase 2 trial readout. The pressure is now on us to make sure that we allocate the funding appropriately and we are excellent at execution. It's a fortunate position to be in. I think that is in part, I hope, a consequence of the quality of our work and the fact that we had clinical data so early. I think it was also related to the fact that what we discussed about earlier, right, that the women's health area has been underfunded for so long, and there is truly a new ecosystem of VCs and VC-driven programs appearing that wants to change this. And the area needs drug development innovation. And I think we are one of the players that has an interesting scientific and clinical proposal. And I think that's what helped us to obtain this funding. But we're very grateful to the investors that support us in this.
Lots of potential there, not just related to fertility, but also to other women's health treatment. So the results from Freya's clinical trials will be worth following. Don't forget to check out the latest news and articles over at labiotech.eu, and I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another Beyond Biotech.